At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Will, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me, as always, is the most negative man on Twitter, Mr. James Fox. How are you, James?
Awesome. How's it going?
I'm doing well. So we'll get to the whole Twitter thing later.
It's actually funny because I'm actually kind of positive about the org right now. Overall.
You know? I feel like everybody at Future Sox is generally pretty positive when it comes to the development of our prospects.
We're prospect huggers. Yes, I know.
We are. And, you know, like I'd like to think that most of us will give most of these guys a lot of leash as it comes to development. And to be put on the other, you know, to be portrayed on the other side of that spectrum is just, it feels foreign to me.
Well, yeah, we'll get into it, but context matters quite a bit in this case. So
I think so. Colson Montgomery, we got some comments here in the chat, and it's a fun thing, you know, with the Samuel Basayo extension that just came through this week. It seems like a kind of a fun topic to bring up here, and baseball brings up, is it too soon, but what's a Colson extension look like?
Yeah, so I don't know that it's too soon. He's like the type of player, though, I feel like, that would possibly take one. Like, it's not a Boris client. He was, you know, a year older than normal high schoolers, right? So he's 23. They have the extra year of control, so he's going to be 30 when he's a free agent. Like, I could see him doing something that's like allows them to have 8 years instead of 7 potentially. And it's, I don't know what the money would look like. I mean, it wouldn't be even Basayo. I think it would, you know, 6 years that guarantees him $50 million, and then they get a break on the back end or something. But I don't feel like Getz is going to go down that route. I think they'll just like kind of take it year by year, but it's not a case where it's like Luis Robert rep by Scott Boras, right? Like, it's like, if Colson Montgomery's good, he could be here a long time. It doesn't seem like something that's, and it was, he signed for $3 million, I think, something in that range. I think he's a candidate for it. I don't know if that's going to be part of the playbook this time yet.
Yeah, so Vince brings up Basayo got 867. I want to say that there's like $50 million guaranteed or something, and then like some escalators or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, and he's another guy that's like a good candidate, because if somebody could look this up for me, I don't have it. He wasn't a huge dollar international signing. Those are the types of guys that usually take money, because like if you get $1 million in the international market, like you're giving some of that to your Buscone, you're giving some to agents. Like you don't see much of it. So if you make the majors, man, like it's really tough to turn down $60 million.
Yeah, I am looking that up right
now.
Yeah,
and it was a million plus, but he wasn't like some $5 million.
Oh,
like
1.3.
Yeah, so that's fine. Yeah. I bet he didn't get $1 million of it.
Well, I mean, he gave some to the Biscone and then ended up paying like whatever.
And who knows what you're paying. Yeah, what you're paying the trainers, like all that stuff. Like that's why, like a lot of times it is like young international guys that take the money.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, Colson gets something like that, but I wouldn't think that they would do it this early. Just a guess.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of it. I don't think Han's strategy was wrong last time. It obviously didn't work, right? I mean, I think they got a discount on Tim Anderson because of it, like for a while, and then obviously you cut bait, like towards the end of that. I mean, the Eloy one looks bad, and even like the Moncada one, like would have been fine if he wasn't hurt. But I mean, I think part of Rick Hahn's calculus, and this will be the last we talk about the old front office, but like part of Rick Hahn's calculus is knowing that if you gamble, right, and you just don't do that, and these guys are awesome, your owner's never signing them. So, you know, you took the gamble that they were going to be good, and you're going to get them at a discount, and that's the only way you were going to keep them. So, like, I understood it. It didn't work, though.
Yeah. David asks, is Colson giving into the three true outcomes approach? I don't think that that's necessarily a priority for him. I just think that he just happens to be murdering baseballs because he's got elite bat speed and they are going very far. I don't think it has anything to do with him specifically hunting that, but I mean, I could be wrong, but he's, yeah. You know,
I mean, he walked in the minors like until he got to the high minors. I mean, look, he was striking out at like a 34% clip in Charlotte. He's striking out 28% of the time in the majors with a 7% walk rate. Can he get the walk rate over 10% and like the K rate down around like 25? I think so. And I think that'll be fine. His BABIP, you know what his BABIP is in the big leagues? Take a guess. It's actually very promising.
Probably. Well, if you're saying it's promising. I'll go ahead and say 200.
Yeah, it's 240. Which I think is good, right? Because I think if we were like, ooh, it's 340, that would be not great. But I mean, batting average, balls in play doesn't really count homers, right? So
Yeah, exactly.
So like all he's doing is hitting donks, like basically. Yeah.
I mean, I did see, you know, that there has been a kind of, you know, with more power, there has been a little bit more of the rolling over to the right side thing.
Right.
You know, but that's gonna happen.
It's 44 strikeouts and 11 walks in 161 plate appearances. Yeah, I mean, I can live with it. I mean, look, 288 OBP is not gonna work, right? But I mean, he's slugging 540. So, yeah. You know, like we've kind of talked about this, and I think it's one of the reasons why I would like to see if he can play shortstop for as long as possible. It's like just this is one of the things I've talked about, right? Like if he's a 240 hitter who hits 30 bombs and his defense is good at short, he's a 4-win player. If you're automatically saying he's first or third, well, then the bat's going to have to carry him a little bit more. But he's definitely exciting, right? Because we look at this core of guys and like I like Teal, I like Caro, like good players, right? Like Colson's the one who like looks like a potential superstar if it hits. Like those other guys are, you know, above average catchers in a league where catchers suck. And Mydroth kind of is what he is. Like Colson's the one, man, where it's like pretty left-handed swing. Like people weren't expecting this at all. I think he's the one that like has people the most excited.
Yep. Trey with the super chat. Thank you so much, Trey. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening as always. Thank you. Appreciate you, man.
He's just leaving before we start talking about Hagen.
Oh, he'll trust me. He'll listen to it.
Oh, I know he listens. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate it. He can't do Hagen Smith talk live. So,
yeah. So here's a question. It like, you know, with having to, you know, say you move Colson to third base. Here's my thinking on this whole thing is that you'd have to have somebody that you actually would put at third base over him to avoid doing that anyway. I mean,
at shortstop, you mean?
No, it's both, really.
Well, here's my problem. I don't want to stick Vargas at first yet. So, like, I'd be more likely to play Colson at short so Vargas can play third so I can go sign a first baseman. Because if you say it's short, or say you put him at third, you put Colson at third, Vargas is at first. So now your corners are like, done. Then you're playing Mydroth at short? Or are you going, because I think, like, the limited amount of money that they're going to spend, and I think they'll spend a little bit, but like that should be first base DH and outfield. Like it's not going to be shortstop. And I wouldn't play Mydroth at shortstop over Montgomery. So it seems pretty easy to me for right now, but I don't know. I don't really know what their plan is.
Yeah. It's tough. I personally think that the defense plays at shortstop. And,
for Colson?
It
does now. I mean, it's average. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, until somebody else is pushing him out of the way to play that position, I think you just leave him there. It's just my thought.
Yeah.
Ron Davis, thanks for a super chat. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Kevin asked a question about Robert. We can do it now or just.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just go ahead and get to that. Inside the clubhouse.
It is. Yes.
It's not hit and runs the Spiegel one on Sundays.
Runs the Spiegel one.
Correct. Right. All right. So, in that, Bruce Levine says that, the White Sox should not pick up Luis Robert's options. Yeah.
Well, so he goes through this big long tangent with David Haugh about the guys who were playing well. Right. And it was this positive White Sox segment, Kyle Teal looks good and Caro and all these guys and, are they going to spend? And he's like, maybe, but here's what I would do. He basically says, I would decline the $20 million option on Robert because he's not worth it and sign two or three guys instead. And it's like,
have we not been down this road 20 times?
It's the Kenny Williams thing. You sign three bad players instead of one good one, right? And I don't think it's even that at this point. We've had this conversation. To me, the decision was already made. You're picking up the option. It was yay or nay in July. You had to decide. If there was any possibility that you weren't going to pick it up, you needed to trade him for whatever you could get. They didn't do that. Now they have to pick it up, right? So then I get all these people on Twitter that are like, what if he hits 200? It's a sunk cost. No, you're picking it up, and you're trying to trade. Because at a minimum, you could trade him this winter for what you got offered at the deadline. You can't decline the option and get nothing. That makes no sense. This is not a thing. I don't know what the payroll number is. It's $37 million pre-arb with Robert and Benintendi, right? So if it's 80, right, say they can spend $80 million bucks, then you can go spend $30 million. You can't go get O'Hearn and an outfielder and a setup guy for, I think you probably can. what are we doing? It's not stopping you from doing anything.
Yeah, at this point, are you spending on additional bullpen arms at this time? Is that something that you want to sink money into at this point with the guys that we have coming up?
No, I don't really. But what are they going to spend? I think you have to spend it left-handed hitting first base / DH. One of those guys you should go get, right? Whether that's there's a few in free agency. And then I really think they need a right-handed hitting outfielder, but I think they need a good one. But we were talking about it in the group chat, right? Could you package some of these guys? What happens with Lenin Sosa, right? Can you go get a right-handed hitting outfielder for Lenin Sosa and one of your pitchers, a Sean Burke plus a young reliever, you know what I mean? Whatever, and you go get an outfielder. But I think right-handed hitting outfielder and left-handed hitting first baseman, that makes a lot of sense to me. If you want to spend on a starter, that makes some sense. I think what would be really cool, and I don't think I haven't looked at this, is if you could trade the 2 years of Benintendi for a expensive pitcher that's underwhelming. That's perfect for me because I have no issue bringing back Mike Tauchman to be your primary left fielder. But I have issues bringing him back if you're also bringing back Benintendi.
Tauchman's have to get rid of one of them.
Tauchman's been pretty good, but he's 35 and he's not great in the outfield anymore. And he's a great clubhouse guy. If you're stuck with Benintendi, I'd probably trade Tauchman and go a different direction.
Yeah. If you can't get rid of that salary, which in the grand scheme of things, it didn't look bad until the second half of the season where he's, just wasn't putting up numbers as much anymore. But
yeah, it really kind of hampers you a little bit, right? Because say it is, say it's O'Hearn and you want to DH him some, but they don't want to play Benintendi in the outfield. And I totally understand why. It also cuts into Lenin Sosa time, right? If you want Lenin Sosa to be part of this thing, but you want Mydroth or Mead or somebody else playing a lot of second base, and he has to DH. Well, then you have to play Benintendi in left field. I just, you know, I mean, to me, it's not my money. Like, you could DFA Benintendi for all I care. It's just not something that this organization traditionally does.
Yeah. I mean, so I've seen some conversations about putting Sosa at first base. And if that's going to be part of the plan, they're going to need to get him set up with somebody that really could pick it and teach him how to play first base, because that's,
yeah,
he needs the help. That's for sure. It's not an easy position. The footwork's completely different than everywhere else that he's ever played. And, you know, there's also the thoughts on whether or not, you know, like, he's making the correct decisions and knows where the ball's supposed to be going, where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there, which has been an issue at every position that he's played, to be fair. You know, he hasn't been at second base. You know, when he's playing second base, he hasn't been at second base for, you know, throws over there. I mean, there's just been a bunch of mental errors when it comes to positioning and where he's supposed to be and where he's supposed to go with the ball. So I guess the lesser of those places would be first base, because he doesn't have to make a decision whether he's got to be at second base or in the hole. Like, he's only got first base to worry about. You know, he doesn't have to, I mean, he has to worry about cutoffs from right field, but I mean, whatever. Yeah. Sort that out.
What do you like better, Josh Naylor or O'Hearn? I just know that Ryan O'Hearn has connections to Fuller, so that one's like obvious to me, because it won't be that expensive.
I also have never seen an article about Ryan O'Hearn stabbing a teammate.
Right. Yes.
So there is that as well. Uncle Ted really likes Naylor, though.
Which is surprising. I'm kind of surprised by that. I mean, he hits lefty, but he doesn't hit that many homers. Uncle Ted kind of likes bombs.
I mean, he hits him against the White Sox. That is one thing I can definitely say.
Yeah, that's like the only team he does it against.
Yes. Yeah. You guys, apparently, apparently this isn't well known. Yes, when Josh Naylor was in the minors, he stabbed a teammate with a knife. And apparently it was a joke, but yeah, he stabbed a teammate. I mean, you get like, that's crazy. Nothing more was brought up. Like, who stabbed somebody?
Maybe it's exactly what they need. Yeah.
Possibly.
Bring Tommy Pham back too.
Yeah.
Naylor and Tommy Pham ever been on the same team?
Just to keep them out of different fantasy football
and
leagues.
Jock Peterson, all of them together.
Awful ideas.
So did we do enough? Colson's got 13 bombs. Grand slam yesterday. Was it a three-run or a two-run? I mean, the home run swing is nice. You know, he was cold for about a week? Or was it longer than that?
I think it was about a week.
Yeah, and now he's just, like, hitting bombs again.
Yeah, and he's getting multi-hit games. I think it's, you know, it's one of those things. This is the case in point where I go, he's young, just let him figure it out, you know? It's going to be a feel-out process. And from where we went on our feelings on Colson from early this year to now is polar opposites.
100%. It's great.
Like, before, I was like, he's not figuring it out. And now I'm at a point where I'm ready to let him figure it out and let him have some run.
Well, you know? He might lead the White Sox in homers. Yeah. In what, like 70 games played, something like that? Not even, I mean, go pull this up from Chris Proctor. I had this same thought today when I was like in a group chat with people talking about like the idea that I just had, like maybe packaging like a few guys to like get someone's, you know, prospect that's blocked. The A's have a bunch of these dudes that are like corner type power guys. Like, and I wonder if you could get one of them. I know Mike Shirley loved Tyler Soderstrom. But that was the year that they took Garrett Crochet. But there was a lot of Tyler Soderstrom hype, like, by the White Sox. He was a prep catcher, you know, but they went pitching, as they often do. But,
yep.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, when you brought up the A's earlier, I was like, well, you know, they've been trade partners many times, and they have some bats, and the White Sox have some pitching. And the White Sox have probably too much pitching when these TJ guys come back. Even if like, say 50% of them when they come back are not ready to roll,
yeah,
for a significant portion of time, you still are going to have too many guys, and yeah, that's like, if you don't pick somebody.
Yeah,
up.
Like I said it today. What is Sean Burke, Lenin Sosa, and Jordan Leisure get you? Probably not Soderstrom, right? But like along those lines of like one of your pitching prospects that looks like a guy that'll stick for 5 years, a reliever, and Sosa. Because like as much as I've been through it with Sosa, like on this podcast, like I openly wondered like whether he could be like a Marcus Semien type. I just don't know where he plays long term, like with this like core of guys. So if they traded him, I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know that he has like a ton of trade value like alone.
So speaking of pitching, one thing that I brought up to you earlier and that you bring up to me talking off air right before we hopped on is Yoandrés Gómez. That is a pretty scouting good win.
Yeah, and like, so this dude was on the Yankees and Dodgers, and those teams just, you know, they just don't have like any sign of trouble, right? Like this happens to them where they like lose a guy because they just need somebody else, and they have so many good players on their 40 man that guys like this get released. The thing that's surprising to me is that the White Sox claimed him on waivers, and then they outrighted him and got him to Charlotte off the roster, turned him into like what he's been, or maybe, you know, what he could have been elsewhere, and then added him back, and now he's like good. There was like a whole host of bad teams that could have also claimed this guy, and like nobody did, which is kind of puzzling. Because look, I didn't know much about him, but I mean,
yeah,
he's pretty nasty, and he's been good in Charlotte, and a lot of these types of guys like do not succeed there.
Yeah, like the main thing that was one of the things is that he would have walks in key situations in Charlotte, and that was when his when his results weren't great. But in the last month or so, he hasn't had that happen as much. And he ended up managing to get promoted up to the Sox, and he's been really good. I mean, granted, you know, he's not giving you a ton of innings, and his pitch count, he does have a lot of waste pitches, but still not bad.
Yeah, and there's been, look, like development isn't linear, right? There's been some issues with Cannon and with Burke, and, you know, our top guys, we'll get into, like, the stuff with Schultz and Hagen. But I think it's pretty clear, like under Bannister and some of this like pitching development staff, they've found some guys like this. I mean, you got this guy, you got Fetty, you had Shane Smith, who, you know, if Shane Smith's a number four starter for you, it's a Rule 5 pick. Like, it's insane, right? So I feel really good about the fact that like if they need a number four starter, like they can find one, like on waivers, you know. So it's stuff like this is like really interesting.
Yeah, so that's my thinking is that, you know, the White Sox are going to, you know, with these prospect pitchers that they have, they can afford to move one of them or two of them if they want to, because they do things like this and pick up a Yoandrés Gómez or a Shane Smith. And from what it appears now is that the pro scouting is working,
yeah.
You know, at least for arms, at least.
Yeah, and Martin Perez, that's a good one too. Like,
yeah, that one.
I mean,
too.
And he's an old veteran, right? But like, he was the right guy. I mean, Martin Perez looked like if he had never gotten hurt, he was going to bring you back a prospect at the deadline. I mean, geez, like look what they did with Adrian Hauser. I mean, it's the same type of thing, right? I think, you know, Savali's been up and down, but it's the right idea.
Yeah.
You looked at Andrew Vaughn's numbers lately?
Oh, he's coming back down to earth. Oh, shockingly.
Oh man, it's like a meteor.
Shockingly.
Like it's like, yeah.
So I did have you know, one of the things that we had mentioned is that some of these guys were being brought down to manage their innings down to Charlotte. And I just wanted to point out something, and this isn't like you know, like a huge Sherlock Holmes thing or anything, but Jonathan Cannon threw 6.1 innings and like 91 pitches or something like that.
Yeah.
Sean Burke, 5 innings, 89 pitches. They're not pitching less.
No, I don't think those guys, but I don't think those guys were sent to Charlotte to like, I think the issue with those guys was that you're going to destroy your bullpen if they're going 3 1/3 in the majors. And like for all the people that are like, oh, these games don't matter. Like, yeah, I'm one of them. Like wins and losses don't really matter. But like Will Venable can't really think that way, right? Like these guys are just like not getting it done. And you're going to destroy your bullpen. It's why they're calling up a reliever every day, right? So like Shane Smith's like IL stint, yes, that's to like manage innings. Jonathan Cannon being terrible and like going to Charlotte, I think is just they have 5 better guys than him right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just with Martin Perez coming back and with Yoandry Gomez pitching well, it just, I mean, you can only have so many guys. Although, yeah, this is the problem with having guys that can only go 3 or 4 innings is you can't have multiple. You can't have multiple of those guys because you don't have the option to have that many long relievers in the pen.
Right, exactly. So it just like doesn't work. I'm curious. Do you think Martin Perez has been good enough for like somebody to claim him or no?
Because
it's common that you'll throw some vets on waivers like at the end of August.
I mean, if he requests it, yeah. I mean, right? I don't see any reason to let him walk because I mean, you're not getting anything out of it. You know, the only thing you're getting is a roster spot, and at this point, is the roster spot that important? What are they at 38 right now?
Yeah, but it's, I think it's more about the 26 man, like, because you know, like, so you get two call-ups and you can't have more than 14 pitchers. So say you brought up Tanner McDougal and Paulette, you can only bring one of them up as a September call-up, but you could bring them both up and just get rid of somebody else, you know. So I think those two guys are...
There are candidates.
Yeah, I think those two guys are very obvious. Like, those are the two guys that I want to see. Is Peyton Paulette and Tanner McDougal down the stretch. I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, for me as well. I mean, I think that you probably are okay with, you know, jettisoning some, you know, something like a Steven Wilson or something like that. And... you know, regardless of him being part of a trade return.
Yeah. He does
you're not getting people out.
Yeah, he does have options. So, like, you could option him and get rid of somebody else. But, yeah, no, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, there are other people to get rid of as well. I was just picking a name out of a hat, you know.
I mean, they just have made up injuries for all these guys. Like, they literally told Elvis Baguero that he got hurt. Like, you're hurt. So, like, go take a seat for a while.
Yeah, you gave up a bunch of runs. Now you're hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, like Tyler Alexander, like he's done good work. Do we need to see him in September? I don't really think we do.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I'm all for seeing Tanner McDougal. You know that. And you know, we've had this talk. He's Rule 5 eligible this year, so he's going on the 40 man. You're not letting somebody. You're not letting somebody Shane Smith him on you, you know?
What do you think that looks like, though, if he's up? Does he start? Is it 3-inning starts, or is it just, like, long or, like, middle relief type, like, what they did with Uriarte and other guys last year? I guess it depends on how many innings he has left. Because here's the thing. Like, if you bring Tanner McDougal in for, like, 1 inning at a time, like, he is going to be disgusting.
Yeah.
Not that that'll like sway your thing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people would be like, oh, now he's your setup guy or anything. But like, if he just like comes in and throws his best stuff for like 1 inning, like he's going to be so nasty that it's just going to be kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. So right now he is sitting at 105.
Yeah, it's the most he's ever thrown.
Yeah, and his last year he threw 92.1, and that is with moving to, you know, with them moving him to Kannapolis. Like last year was.
Yeah.
We won't even get into all that.
Okay, but, so four. But how about four 3-inning starts then? That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine they probably want to get him to 125, probably, I would think. So he's got about 20 innings left. So we got, 3 weeks left in the Double Barons season, I think. I think it's 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I don't know that you think they care. Like, you think that they want to keep him there to, like, win?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't, yeah. I don't see why not. Yeah, and then bring him up after the season's over, because, I mean, you're not sending him to Arizona, and I don't think that he will see an Arizona Fall League at this point.
Yeah.
Baseball, no, I have no idea why Braden Montgomery was in the Birmingham lineup
today. Yeah, probably just
I mean, he
Sunday
played both games of a doubleheader yesterday, so that might be
probably
it as well.
A Sunday day off is my guess.
Yeah. Give him a couple of days to rest those legs. And, yes, to answer your question, I do think that he's had a swing change.
I don't know, guys.
Yeah, I mean, Riku just also got over a week-long injury. I'm not entirely even sure what it was. It might have been him fouling a ball off of himself, possibly. I kind of escapes me at the moment. And I don't know when Galani's going to be back. I haven't talked to him. I should drop him a line and find out. But apparently, from what Doug Greenwald was saying in Birmingham, is that he seems like he's in good spirits. So apparently things are healing. But
good.
As somebody that has had a massive eye injury, I can attest to the fact that it hurts really, really bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the worst pain you could have in your life when you have a scratched eyeball.
Nathan asked about Kylie McDaniel leaving Braden Montgomery off the top 100. Yeah, that's a little bit. I mean, he didn't have him on preseason either, I don't think. Or he had him, I think he was he had him in the 80s. And that
he had
was
him at six on the White Sox list, is
right? Yeah. And so he had him in the 80s overall in the top 100, I think, in the preseason. And when he ranked, right, it was right around the time he was slumping bad. And then he went on like that 2 week tear. I mean, we talked about it. Like I mean, he was like moving down at Baseball America and some other publications too. And then he got really hot. So, yeah, like I get it. I mean, if you're there are some people who think that who thought he was a platoon hitter already and he strikes out a lot, you know, and if you think he's a corner, like I get it. I think he's better than that, but I understand the people who don't think he's like a top 100 prospect, because that's a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah. Give me 1 second. I'm just looking at something right quick. So we got a super chat here from Wolf. Who puts on an outfield glove first, Sam Antonacci or Gerald Perez? Antonacci starting in left field in 27.
I don't think either of them in the minors, you know, I mean, like, is Antonacci similar to Baldwin, where it's like, okay, for you to be on this team, you have to like play more spots, maybe. But I mean, there's no reason to move Gerald Perez out of second or short, like, until he proves that he can.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today. Save big money at Menards.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price, exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Hit it.
Especially with 20 home run power.
Yeah, I mean, that's an asset at second base.
Yeah, and he definitely has a glove to be there, so.
Yeah, I don't know that they have to move anybody to the outfield right now. I mean, it's a weak spot. They have to add guys to the system, but I don't know.
Yep. Thanks for a super chat, Wolf. Appreciate you. David brings up, I am loving what Wickelman Gonzalez is doing with the Sox. Will is slow playing him, not throwing too much at him. So far, so good. Yeah, I mean, that's a solid fourth piece in that deal.
I think he might end up being the third piece.
Could be.
I mean, and he's like, what, a seventh inning guy if it all goes well? But yeah, I mean, I think he should be in the bullpen the rest of the year. I think he should be down in the bullpen. I think Peyton Paulette should be down in the bullpen. I don't really know what they're waiting for. Like, it doesn't really make any sense to me. I mean, Paulette struggled initially, I think, with the baseball and with the International League, but I mean, he's been pretty good like the last month or so. And I don't know that we have a closer. Not that it's the most important thing. I mean, I don't know. Did you see the Merkin article this week about Grant Taylor? It's a little,
yeah.
If Merkin's writing it, it's a possibility that he comes to spring training as a starter, you know.
That is good. So Jamie brings this up, and he's been one of the hottest hitters for the Knights in the last couple of weeks. Will Robertson, Benny getting a phantom IL stint. I mean, I'll say this: if Benny had another IL stint, nobody would bat an eye because he's had so many of them since he's been here.
I know, God, I know. Or well, maybe Michael A. Taylor gets claimed on waivers.
Yeah. I mean,
and then you just have
one of those
then you
guys.
Just have Robertson on the team because Taylor can help somebody.
Yeah, and that would be, you know, it'd be bittersweet for everybody involved, I'm sure, because he's
such
a good dude. But
like, what? Like, let's see some of these other guys.
Yeah,
and he could like, I mean, he can help a contender, man. Like, I've been impressed. Like, they made that signing, and I was like, I get it. Like, he's got power, and he plays defense, and supposedly he's a really good dude, and you know, like that's fine. He could help a team.
Yeah.
The Kevin, the Merkin article, the gist of it was that like Grant Taylor still wants to start in the front office, like might like let him try essentially. Ooh, Grant Taylor for Soderstrom. I don't know.
Oof.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's
that one hurts, I think, a little bit. Like,
hear me out. Most of his errors are at third base, at least as of late. Most of them have been at third base, at least maybe I'm projecting that, but mm-hmm. I think Caleb Bonimer's, most of his errors have been at third base, and it's not his normal position. He can play it,
yeah,
but it's not where he's normally at. So I'm willing to give him a pass on that, especially when he's hitting the ball the way he is. I will give him time to figure it out.
So I don't think I've been low on Bonimer, but I couldn't justify putting him above Billy Carlson just because of how I feel about him or Montgomery. But I feel like there's a chance next year that Bonimer is like a top 50 prospect in baseball.
Yeah, he hit home run number 10 today.
Like if he keeps doing that, you know, like if he's like a 20 homer shortstop as a teenager, you know, like, because he'll go to Winston next year. Like, he's already moving up. Because I think a lot of the issue was, like people or scouts kind of thought he wasn't a great defender and he'd definitely have to move off as short.
Right.
And he's been pretty good. Like, so, yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise. I think we're hearing similar things out of Arizona, you know. I don't, you know, who knows. But, you know, there's people we know and trust out there that think that you know, Carlson and Foskey both look pretty good. So I think they'll be in Kannapolis to start next year, which will be fun.
Yep. So baseball asks if Raul Perez to Birmingham in 26. I don't know actually if he's going to start there. I know that, and this is something that I posted about earlier this week on Twitter, about him only having four strikeouts in the month of August up until this series this week. And, you know, I tweeted about it. And of course, the next day he struck out twice. But he's been, his contact numbers have been a lot better, and things are looking up for him. You know, I mean, obviously the power has been there this year, and you don't see 20 homers out of a 20 year old.
Yeah, no, it's been like, good.
Very often at all. So, oh boy, here we go. Tom asks, any thoughts about Grant Taylor shortening his arm swing like Giolito did back before the 2019 season? I mean, so Tom, the thing that that Bannister said specifically about Grant Taylor is the amount of extension he gets, those guys tend to injure more. So I don't think it's about it being too violent. I think it's just that he's out in front of his body a little bit too much and it causes issues. But I could be wrong. So Chris brings up this, which I was talking to you about earlier. Samuel Zavala been heating up. So I looked it up earlier because I've been watching it, and obviously I watch all the games, so there's that. Since June 1st, he's got a 144 WRC plus, plays a plus-plus outfield. The BABIP is 337 in that period of time, but he does hit the ball very hard. So, because he hits the ball so hard, I am going to look past the BABIP just because he hits 100-plus mile an hour really often. And we had the conversation earlier about your thoughts about him going to double A, but, you know, wondering how he was going to fare in double A. And I just, to me, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, we're going to have to figure it out eventually. And at this point, I think he's hitting like 289 since June 1st.
Yeah. Like, do you think they'd have guys like Zavala or Perez go to Birmingham for the playoff push?
Yeah, so I mean, the guy walks at a prodigious clip, so I don't think that it would be necessarily a bad thing. And you know, as Jeff mentions, the infield in Winston-Salem is going to be very crowded opening day next year. I mean, they gotta move guys, but I just, with the, you know, how much, I mean, Jeurel Perez, I think, is at like 115, 120 strikeouts this year.
Does Lodice start in Winston-Salem, or does he go right to Birmingham? I mean, he's been pretty... Talk about Kyle Lodice, because you've like seen him now, at least on video.
Yeah, well, I mean, I saw him live, and the glove looked good. I saw him play at Bowling Green, but that was also his first series, and the bat was a little rusty. Jeff has seen him, what, like four times this week, Jeff? And he's been tearing the cover off of the ball this week. He's got three home runs in this past series. And, you know, I say what you will about the Wilmington Blue Rocks pitching. The Dash murdered their pitching this week. They won 5 out of 6 games. So, yeah, 3 home runs and a triple. Jeff saw him 3 times this week. So, yeah, I don't know. Lodice has looked pretty good. You know, I like what I've seen from him. Now that he's like kind of settling in a little bit, he's looking more comfortable in the box, and it's, you know, he's putting good swings on the ball.
Well, he hit a ball 108.
Yep. Yeah, his home run today, 108 down the line.
Like, we kind of talked about this. He was a non-traditional White Sox pick because he hadn't really had a ton of success with wood bats before, anyways.
Lodice is a shortstop, Chris. So, no, Jack, they do not. They don't have available stats. They do have stats. They keep stats
and stuff. And there's a lot of good info at Sox Machine right now because Fegan was just out there. Some Carlson Foskey stuff. He interviewed Carlson. And then they also talked to Ryan Fuller, who we talked to as well. There was some pretty good insight on those guys. the podcast is just like one episode with, you know, with James Fegan and Fuller. But then, you know, there's a whole bunch, like we have Jerry and a whole bunch of other friends that we've made that are out there like watching these guys too.
Yep. All right. So we should, move on to, a couple of the other top pitching prospects in the White Sox system and actually have this conversation. So today, Noah Schultz came back after patellar tendonitis that he had been out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, I think 3 weeks. And he pitched two innings, had four strikeouts in two innings, allowed two weak contact singles. And a run scored. He thought a ground ball was coming faster than it was, and he moved his glove. And when he moved his glove, the ball hadn't got there yet, so it got by him. And then there's a wild pitch, which personally, in my opinion, looked to me like a pass ball, but that ended up scoring the run. So he had one unearned run. And he threw 37 pitches, and I want to say 25 strikes. So, yeah, he looked good today. New grip on his slider, apparently, from what I understand. And it was moving, and it was nice. And it was great to see him back in the zone today.
Yeah. No, that's fun. You know, I mean, when did Opper pitch the other day when he hit 100 and there was some question, like, about a hot gun?
101.
In our group chat. And so he's getting some prospect love, like, out on the internet, too. You know, there's people mentioning him. And obviously, Aram, I think there was a tweet that Aram Layton of, you know, one of our partners now at Just Baseball, where he kind of noticed. I feel like, you know, a lot of these sites and prospecty type guys who have, like, data and they pay for synergy and, like, all that, like, their interest is peaked because of, like, how good his stuff is and, like, what the data says, basically.
And to them, we say, welcome.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, he was nasty in Arizona, too. He just didn't throw any innings. Yeah. I mean, yep. He wasn't this nasty, but like, you know, I mean, this is another guy who's bordering on. I mean, look, he does this at Birmingham, right? I mean, you're talking about a top 100 guy potentially.
Yeah, so Kevin brings up saw Schultz was up to 97. Yeah, he had 97 on his four-seam. I think he hit 96 on his sinker.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, the stuff seemed better for Schultz.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, you know.
Oh, wow. That's true. Bonnemer's going to Winston-Salem.
Yeah, there we go. Love that.
So does Billy Carlson go to Kannapolis?
You're getting crazy.
Is he so good that he, they, you know, I mean, who's the short? I mean, unless they just play Colby Shelton there.
Yeah, I would think probably either that or maybe, yeah, they leave Shelton at shortstop and then they move DePino to third base, his natural right. position.
Yeah.
Possibly. But that would mean also that you would have to have somebody to play first base. And the White Sox do not have very many options at first base, as we have talked about.
No, yeah, they do
Jeff
not.
Jeff also and DePino brings up Bryce Elbin, Eblin.
Yeah, I just... You know, my guess is, so who's playing shortstop primarily in Winston? Lodice, right?
Yeah, Lodice, and then you've got Ryan Burrows bouncing between third and second, and Gerald's playing second.
So Gerald Perez has to be going to Birmingham.
I mean, right? That makes the most sense, right?
And then you're just gonna, and then you just let Bonnemer play short and third because you have Lodice there.
Bryce Eblin's on the IL.
You know what I mean? Like you have Lodice there. That's like the only thing that makes sense to me because you're not going to like bring Bonnemer up to play short every day at Winston and move Lodice right now. I mean, Bonnemer's, I guess, more important, right? But
Or do you play Bonnemer at third base?
Right, every day.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And keep Lodice at shortstop and Jurall at second base? I mean, you could. I mean, they. I did see that Winston's roster was one or two short of full capacity, so they have the room to take on guys.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, I don't know. That's awesome news. I'm happy that Bonnemer's moving up, but I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, Jeff, that's a great question. Jeff asked if Ryan Burrows is going to sit. That's a solid question. I mean, also, but here's the thing. Here's the one thing that you do have from Ryan Burrows is that they've put him in left field as well. So, I mean, he will get innings somewhere. They'll figure out some place to put him. That's about all I got on that one. At this point, you start, as 13 Dove Man says, these are good problems to have, and they really are. It's just so many guys fighting for spots, and this is something that I was talking about earlier in the season, is that you are trying to find innings for guys because guys are playing well enough that you think that they deserve to get those innings, and that's exactly what you want to see. You want to see guys fighting at the bat rack to get up there. So
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there, it's interesting times. I think, you know, future Sox obviously, right? But like the big league team is watchable because you have a catching tandem that's fun, and you have Colson Montgomery up there, and I think we might have a couple more guys that are interesting. But I mean, like beneath that, I'm just really curious with just like the hitting development, right? Like I always kind of brush away, you know, like stats of college guys in their draft year and say, like you got to wait till next year, right? But that's usually when they're bad. It's like a preseason game, right? It's in football. It's great if like it's good, but it doesn't matter if it's bad, that sort of thing. But I mean, what Lodice is doing, I think is kind of interesting because this wasn't, you know what I mean? And Shelton has struggled and DePino has struggled. But I mean, Lodice is a high A hitting. Well, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, straight out of college, straight to high A. That's pretty impressive. Jeff asked me if who has the best shortstop arm of all the guys in the minors here. That's a great question. Does have. I mean, I haven't seen him in person yet, but I mean, I know it's good. But as of right, I'd say probably Burrows might have like a hair over Bonnemer, maybe, and then maybe he's a hair over Lodice, but I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think what scouts think, it's second for Lodice. Who knows, right? Maybe he gets better and that's wrong, but you know, I think offensive minded second baseman is what most have said. I don't think I don't think Shelton's a shortstop. I mean, Bonnemer's been not bad there.
No, he's been good. I would say like the thing that I would say about Bonnemer is that I feel like the arm's good. I feel like there's some like one thing that Ryan Burrows has over Bonnemer is the fluidity in which his body moves. I feel like he's a lot more loose. I wouldn't say necessarily athletic because I feel like Bonnemer's athletic, but I mean, to me, like it seems like maybe his hips are a little bit more loose, so he can like spin and throw from weird angles a little bit better than Bonnemer can.
Yeah,
and maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I'd have to see him throw side by side to actually figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, Colson Montgomery's arm's pretty good at short.
Yeah, it is. It is for sure. And as Jeff also mentions, this is something that we've been talking about for a while, that they'd send MVP to Winston-Salem. Man, that would
I don't know. I mean, maybe there's
too much sense.
Maybe there's like other promotions coming. Cause I think just Bonnemer is strange. I mean, I guess it's not because like he's a top prospect and like if it's deemed that he's like graduated from low A, like okay, he goes to high A, but it's like the roster's weird. So I feel like somebody else might move.
So today, Hagen Smith made his second start of the week, and we have to get to it eventually. You can keep on, you know, ducking underneath it.
Yeah. Well, but, and the opponent matters to me.
It does. The Barons played the Trash Pandas, the Rocket City Trash Pandas, who are the double A team for the Angels. And just my personal feelings on the thing is that they are good enough to play in Advanced A.
I mean, Oscar Colas is one of their best players.
He's not good.
Right.
He's striking out a ton. He did not play today, I don't think. Yeah, he did not play today. But every time you turn around on these pitching highlights that I put up, Oscar Colas, strikeout.
Right. So Hagen was pretty good on Tuesday. You know, it looked like he was like turning a corner a little bit, and he went 5 innings, which I think is even, you know, probably the most important part. I've been kind of harping on that all year. I've been one that has kind of like disregarded his stuff a little bit, like as long as he's thrown 5 innings. Today's start, 3 2/3, 5 walks, 3 earned, 4 Ks, 3 Ks against, the trash
today,
Rocket Pandas. Yeah.
Yeah. Today was 3 Ks versus
5 walks.
5 walks.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not gonna work, and the stuff's not as good as it was. So, you know, whatever. Like, if you think I'm alarmist or Ian, and you know, like what, like guys, I'm like out publicly with it. Like, but like Ian's not gonna argue. I mean, we have these like conversations like via text all day, and then I just happen to tweet about it and catch the fury. But yeah, it's not. I mean, we're not feeling that great about this right now.
Yeah, and I mean, with full transparency, I may or may not have been the person that mentioned Appel, you know, Mark Appel, in that conversation. It's just the command has not been good, and the stuff has ticked down. And you can call us alarmists. You can say it's early in his life. You can say all you want. All we're doing is throwing out the facts and our feelings on this. And, you know, we generally just try and be honest about our feelings on how this stuff is all working out. And there are definite red flags, and they are serious red flags in our eyes for where he was drafted. That is it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I hope he's great. I just like Arizona Fall League scares the hell out of me. Like, I mean, look, I'm glad that they're doing it because he needs innings and it makes sense. But my goodness, it could be bad. Like, it could be not fun. And, you know, it's a hitter's league because good pitchers don't go because orgs don't send their good pitchers. Because they're usually, you know, they've already thrown their 130 innings or whatever, you know. So, can he get it together? God, I hope so. Because, like, another factor is, like, what they passed on, right? This isn't, like, me and Ian are complaining. Because, like, if they took Hagen Smith, like, with the 9th pick in the draft after all these guys were gone, like, it would be much different. They overslotted him and paid $8 million with bats on the board that are, like, top 10 prospects in baseball right now. This has to work. Like, this is, like, not fine. And I know, like, it's his first season and everything people keep
We've
telling
heard
me.
Right? All,
like,
of,
all
them.
Of it. Like, I get it. I hope I'm wrong. I've been wrong a lot. I hope I'm wrong this time. But I'm, like, worried. So, you know, the Sox say they're not worried. I'd love to know how they, like, actually feel. They clearly don't. I mean, they don't think he's hurt because he's pitching. Did the change in mechanics, like, screw with him this much? Like, he didn't throw that many strikes in college either. You know, which is where the, you know, people said to, like, oh, I'm going way overboard, like, comparing him to Carson Fulmer. Like, okay, maybe I am, right? Like, but like the first time I saw Carson Fulmer pitch in college, I was like, he doesn't throw any strikes. Like, these are, you know, like, future accountants and PE teachers, like, swinging through curveballs that aren't strikes. You know, and the Mark Appel, like, it's just, ugh. Like, I want it to be better, guys. I do. I really do. But
I mean,
it's like
it
not
was,
good. It's not good enough right now.
Yeah. I mean, like, my thought on that was, you know, it's a lack of strikes and the stuff ticking down a little bit. And that's exactly what happened with him. And I mean, granted, he did end up having injuries.
Yes.
That, like, really derailed his career. And, like, hopefully that is not on the horizon and that's not part of the issue here. But I mean, that's where I was drawing the parallels. I really hope that's not the case.
How would you feel if he was 96 to 99 walking way too many people?
I would be fine
way better,
with it.
It's way the, better, it's the right? Combination 100%.
It's a combination of the both that's given me the heebie-jeebies. Like I don't know what to make of it. And the White Sox don't seem concerned.
Well, because some of it to me is like, are you not throwing strikes because you know your stuff isn't good enough? Or can you just not command?
Yep.
So, Tom, Carlos Rodon is a good comparison for him because I think even at Hagen's peak, if everything goes correctly, he's going to walk 4 guys per 9 in the big leagues. The hope is, though, that his strikeout rate is up over 11 and he's not giving up that many hits, right? Like, if he walks 3 guys in a start and gives up 3 hits but strikes out 11, you know, like, whatever, right? It's fine. The thing is with Rodon, like, Rodon didn't see these, like, velo dips, like, in the minors. Like, yeah, there were times where he was clearly hurt in the big leagues throwing 93, and then he would go on the IL because he was hurt. Hagen Smith's not hurt right now. Changed his mechanics, right? Because he was hurt. He was not injured. He was hurt, right? I guess we could use that distinction. His elbow hurt, but there was nothing structurally wrong, and they thought that it was mechanical, and then they worked on his mechanics, and he's come back, and he's walked 6 guys per 9 innings since.
Yeah, so, which is good for, like, out of, like, what did Dylan say? It was, like,
it's not good,
435.
He's, like, 419 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
It's downright frightening. And, like, I brought this up to, like, this is the first time he's made 2 starts in a week. He's throwing in AA, like, in the Southern League. Like, all those things are true, right? But this was a dude who I was told was going to mow through the minors and be in the big leagues at the end of the year. And he's, like, not even close to that guy right now.
Yeah, and to answer Vince here, I did see him hit 96.07 once today, which is the hardest I've seen him throw in months. But I mean, it's still way short of the 97 average that we saw for him in college. You know, like, he's averaging like 93.5.
Right. I mean, we see him touch a 96, like, but it's not that consistently.
Duff Van says he has deception to his pitches. He will be fine.
Well, he does have
again,
deception, and it's the one.
That's the one thing he has. That's the only thing. If this is what he is, he wasn't the number 5 overall pick. This is the problem with that.
Yeah.
This is the entire problem. Is that I don't have a problem with his results if he wasn't the 5th pick in the draft. That's where.
Over guys that they picked him over. J.J. Right. Weatherholt and Connor Griffin. How would they look right now?
Probably pretty good.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Either of those guys, we'd be talking about moving Colson Montgomery to third base immediately.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so, and
what do you think about that from Jack? How much better is the competition in AA than the SEC? I mean, it's still college baseball.
I mean, it's definitely better. It's definitely better. I mean, that's where you're seeing like all the top pitching is in AA.
And the Southern League has like the cavernous parks and stuff too. It's not.
Yeah.
Like
which is one of the things that I've thought about for quite a while is that, you know, people are like, well, he's only given up 3 home runs this year.
Dude.
Well, yeah, look at the places he's pitching.
Could you imagine if he was pitching in Charlotte right now?
Yeah, if he was pitching in Charlotte, the guy would have given up, you know, like an additional like 10 home runs at least, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, and there was something with like Schultz, right? Like, I've gotten this pushback like, oh, you guys don't say anything bad about Noah Schultz. Like, Noah Schultz has been hurt all year. Like, and they've like tinkered with a bunch of stuff. Like, he looked way better today. Like, I was actually, it was refreshing to me that Noah Schultz had a lower body injury because that explained some of the struggles. I can't explain this Hagen thing. Like, I wish you would tell me he's non-arm related injured. That would be great. I'd feel so much better. Like if you were like, oh yeah, this guy's like oblique has been like on fire all year. Okay, great. That helps me. I don't want his arm to be injured because that's terrible. And like, I don't really want him to be hurt. But if they were like, oh yeah, his, you know, like Noah Schultz had patellar tendonitis in his plant leg. Yeah. I mean, no wonder why he, you know, he had a tough time, you know, in Charlotte in the International League.
Yeah. So it was mentioned earlier. I'm not sure if it was you, Jack, or not, had mentioned if we had to do it over again, would you pick Cags over Hagen?
Well, but I wouldn't have picked Cags. There's two other guys I would have picked over Cags.
Yep.
So that's hard for me to, like gun to my head right now. Like, would I take Hagen or Cags? Like, yeah, I'm taking freaking Cags. He's in the big leagues. I mean, of course. But I would take Weatherholt or Connor Griffin over Cags. Still, like right now.
And Doveman says Connor Griffin will struggle with pro pitching. Well, guess what? Smith is struggling with
why anybody thinks that, though, after seeing what he did as a 19-year-old, like, in high A, and now he's in double A. I just don't know, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, the one thing I would do, though, like, if you could make that trade right now, like, I would just put Cags at first and tell him to mash. We're not doing this outfield thing. Like, I don't care. Go play first base and mash.
I mean, like, when we asked the question before the draft last year, Joe Doyle laughed about it because he thought it was so absurd to put him in the outfield.
It doesn't make any sense. And it's the same thing these teams do. Like, who's the Torkelson? Like, they announced him as the third base. Because, like, these teams get it. Like, they don't want to draft the first baseman. So you announce him as something else. And then it's like, oh, well, he ended up at first anyway. Like.
Yeah. That's fine. Is if you try it somewhere else and it doesn't work and they end up at first base, fine. As long as they can hit enough to justify it. Move Hagen to AAA in Charlotte.
No. I mean, guys, like, I don't know if anybody, like, and I know, like, everybody that's listening to us are, you know, you guys are kind of sickos. Like, I love the Arizona Fall League, but dude, like, I'm telling you, like, it's really hot and the ball flies and, like, it's a hitter's league for a reason. Like, even, like, not great hitters, like, break out there. Like, Grant Taylor was disgusting and struggled there. Like, yeah. I just don't know that it's going to go well.
Yeah, if you're looking to go on a deep dive into the rabbit hole on what it's like, look up the Magnus effect on baseballs on the internet and just take a look and see what it does to baseballs in Arizona. You will be like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah. I think we're done. I think we're good.
Yeah. Are you good, James? You're good for the night?
Yeah.
All right. Let me walk this bad boy out. You have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. Future Sox Podcast, which is now a partner in the Just Baseball Media Network. If you are looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there is a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat, as has been many times tonight. We appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He's James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate you all. Thank you for hanging on and hanging out with us and commenting and driving the chat. We appreciate you guys. Have a great week. We will talk to you guys.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.